All right, we are going to start an RCFB talk shortly, so we will let you know as soon as we've begun. Fire off that tweet. There we go. All right. Hi, everybody. This is the latest RCFB talk. My name is Bob Akhayeri, and as always, we love to hear from you. I am now going to go ahead and, as I've always complained, there's never a green room here. It's you just launch into it and then tweet it out and let folks know that you're hosting something. So my co-host will be joining in a moment. But as always, we invite you to, if you want to talk about anything in college football, just send a request. We will let you up and we'll enjoy hearing from you. So, all right, we have somebody already. So why don't we go ahead and start with that? Why not? Hey, Tim. Tim, this is we'd love to hear from you. Tell us what's on your mind. Just hit the unmute. Unmute's going to be in the bottom left. I know it's a little wonky sometimes with how Twitter operates, although I'll say it's more reliable than our first shows that were on Reddit. In fact, the last time we did one of these shows, turns out Reddit was down for the time we were doing it. All right, it looks like you got it to work.
Hey, what's up?
Hey, how are you?
Doing good. I was thinking about that Twitter account thing, you know, you were talking about.
Oh, and... yeah, sure. Yeah, we threw that out there just for those who may not realize. Well, if you could take over, and this is we didn't come up with this idea. This was come up by someone on the subreddit, and I love to give them Aquarium Gravel Hater. There's one. But if you had access to any Twitter account to fire off one tweet to create as much chaos in the college football scene as possible, what would you tweet and where? What account would you tweet that from? So now that I've said that, I'd love to hear what your thoughts are on that.
Well, Saban does not have an account, but if... So I guess the next big thing would be, you know, Kiffin is going to troll the heck out of it when Saban does announce his retirement. You know, Kiffin's going to start. But yeah, definitely Kiffin. If I had access to Kiffin's account, I would start dropping fake receipts about other coaches. You know what I'm saying? Just you know, either real or fake dirt I had on them. Just it'd just be hilarious.
Which coaches would be the ones you'd want to target in that kind of a prank?
Well, obviously the ones he worked with under Saban would be funny because, you know, some of those stories that have gotten out at coaching clinics, like, you know, Kirby is famously late for a lot of shit, you know what I'm saying? And stuff. So, you know, he probably has dirt on everybody. That's just Kiffin's, you know, when you have Kiffin, he's your asshole, but, you know, that's just, you know, that's just his personality, you know what I'm saying? And he's a good enough coach that makes it worth it for the most part, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, and he, I mean, and I know, and my co-host Sirius is now hopped on, but I know he loves to talk about this as well, but it was always fun to watch his sort of evolution on social media because mm-hmm. – Obviously, you know, comes from a coaching family, grew up in Minnesota, which is actually where I'm at right now. Ended up at Fresno State, realized he wasn't going to be a NFL quarterback, moved into coaching. And then, you know, from there ended up under Pete Carroll, where he kind of grew to his success maybe a little too early because, you know, the Raiders under Al Davis weren't exactly the most hospitable place. But then after, you know, ping-ponging to Tennessee, then USC, getting tarmac, then going to, you know, Nick Saban's school for coaches who need some work. And then, you know, it seems to be the moment he got himself out of there and at the FAU, he just had a blast. I mean, I think all of us remember seeing those initial FAU tweets or videos where he seemed kind of not totally enthused, but then he realized it's actually just part of his shtick. I don't know, but we were just talking about this last week, Sirius.
Yeah, I think that basically what you're describing is just going into his phone and looking at the former Saban assistant group chat and group text and just, you know, posting screenshots left and right is what it sounds like. 'Cause he's talked about that and about how, you know, sometimes what you see on Twitter actually started, you know, amongst themselves. You know, they had somebody mock up a Photoshop or something like that, to make fun of one of the other coaches. And then they just decide, you know what, this is pretty funny. We're gonna put this out there for everybody to enjoy, especially between himself and Kirby. So, I'm sure that there's some pretty funny interactions you could glean from that, either roasting each other or you know that they've got to be talking a lot of smack about some other stuff that's going on in college football as well.
Yeah.
Thanks so much for that suggestion. That was a good one. That was a great way to kick it off. I thought that was going on to Lane Kiffin's. If you could, again, the question kind of we're sort of going with, and we'll talk whatever else if people want to bring up other issues. But we thought it would be fun to start with if you had access to any one Twitter account to fire off a tweet that would create chaos in the CFB scene in one tweet, if possible. What would you tweet and from what account? But we appreciate it. Thanks so much for joining us, Tim.
No problem.
All right. So let's see here. Spencer, you sent a request. We'd love to hear from you. And again, any of you else out there, I see a couple more adding requests. We'll try to get to whoever we can. Love to hear from you, Spencer.
Hey guys, how you doing today?
Good. How are you?
Doing pretty good. Just wanted to get your thoughts on what you think about Billy Napier's entourage that he's building down in Gainesville. And see what you think where it's headed.
Well, yeah, I mean, obviously that was, I think, one of the better gets of the offseason with Billy Napier heading over to Florida. I think, you know, a lot of people were wondering when he was going to leave Louisiana. I mean, it was inevitable. If you can get success there, it just seemed like he was going to end up going somewhere. And then Florida, I think it seems like a solid hire, and he's certainly competent. He can put together a good team. Serious, do you want to add to this? I mean, I don't want to just totally like grab everything from there, but and Spencer, how are you feeling about it yourself? I mean, we can profess to know everything about everything, but I'd love to know what your thoughts are on that.
I mean, I'm pretty excited about it. I think if our fans can stay out of the way for a couple of years, let him build the program the way that it needs to, I think it's going to develop into something pretty magical from my standpoint.
It looks like we're going serious there.
I'm still here. I'm still here. Yep.
Okay. So what are your thoughts on this? I mean, obviously he pulled Sean Spencer over as defensive coordinator, and that's, you know, Coach Chaos. So that's a big get. And I mean, he's proven he can. I mean, I remember I got a chance before the pandemic kind of shut down my own travel going to media days. I met him when he was at his first media day over at Louisiana, and he struck me as a guy who was just ready to go up. I mean, he had the pedigree. I think everyone was excited at Louisiana that they got him because obviously that was his first coaching gig after, you know, he had been, you know, at Arizona State for a hot minute, but, you know, he had been under the, again, like we're just talking about the Saban school coaching, except he hadn't failed before. So it was kind of a plus. He'd been, you know, the wide receiver coach at Alabama before he'd done that 1 year as the offensive coordinator over at Alabama, pardon me, over at Arizona State. But, I mean, he seems like I would be I'd be shocked if Florida fans aren't going to be weren't happy enough to head in the next season. I mean, especially after the last couple of coaches, he seems like the right kind of right fit for the job. I'm not sure if there's really any counter to that at this point. I mean, who could they have hoped for? This is a really crazy offseason for coaching hires with obviously Oklahoma becoming free, USC becoming free. And others.
Yeah, I mean, really, really successful. You can look at his tenure at Louisiana and say, well, you know, he was only there for 4 seasons. He's only been a head coach for 4 seasons, but I mean, he did everything right there, got better every year and had a lot of success. So I don't really know that that's a knock against him per se. Looks like he's pulling a lot of his coaching talent guys that have deep ties to Louisiana, which I think that'll be interesting. There's already some animosity between Florida and LSU. So, you know, pulling in some LSU alums or guys who have coached multiple years in the state of Louisiana, I think that could be interesting. Seeing, obviously, he's going to a really rich recruiting grounds in Florida, but also how much of that talent is he going to be able to pull in from the state of Louisiana? And Brian Kelly coming in, you know, very much is not from Louisiana, could actually give them an opportunity to create some drama and tension there too.
Absolutely. I agree. Well, Spencer, thank you so much for joining us this evening. We appreciate it. And good luck next season. I think everyone's going to be interested to see how that pans out. But on paper, it seems great. But, you know, we've seen that story work in both directions.
Thank you, guys.
Yeah, I got something I want to say. There's a lady named Allie Burbue in here, and I just wanted to say she has a great set of tits. Another thing I wanted to talk about is...
All right, we're going to pass on that particular line of conversation. Hey there. So, Juwan, we're adding you to the call. We'd love to hear from you. Again, if you want a topic of discussion, one of the kind of the humorous things we're going for is if you had access to any one Twitter account to fire off one tweet to create as much chaos in the CFB scene as possible, what would you tweet and from what account? So we had a good one earlier. A gentleman from Alabama thought it would be real fun to get Lane Kiffin's account and start throwing shade, which we were just realizing probably wouldn't be all that different than what he typically does. But Juwan, you're up. We'd love to hear from you.
Hey, can you guys hear me now?
Sure can.
I don't know about the tweet question, but I'm interested to see the Texas versus Alabama game. I believe that's week 2 or 3 this season. And with the guys that Texas has added to their roster, and I'm waiting to see if they're still going to get that defensive lineman piece from TCU. I wonder if that could be a good game this year, especially early on. And we know Alabama's going to reload and have some more guys, hopefully, that can pick up the slack of Jamison Williams and John Mechie. But I'm still interested. That game early on, I'm not sure if it's in Brian Denny or over at the Texas Longhorns home field. But I got my eye on that one early in the season. I think Steve Sarkisian, I think they'll have a much, much better season than what they had last year. They've added guys on offense. They've added guys on defense. And I just think it's going to be a much better season for the Longhorns this year. But I want to know, what game are you guys looking forward to early next season in 22?
Well, you know, I'm going to say you probably named one of the top three for a lot of people. I mean, it's week two for Texas, at least, and they're hosting it. So I know you mentioned that word. So it's going to be at Dal K Royal. But, man, and maybe Sirius is going to have a different opinion on this. I think it's going to still be – I'm still going to, if I were to put money down, I'd still put it on Alabama. I mean, I know it's going to be real. Everyone's going to be curious to see how that game goes because it's Texas and it's Alabama. And as much as some people like to decry, you know, blue blood teams and teams with a lot of, you know, historic clout. I mean, that is just an exciting matchup, no matter what. I mean, even when they played each other for a title, it was that was obviously the pinnacle of that particular series. But I mean, I think everyone's going to be looking to see how Texas does against them, and especially since they're going to be joining them in the conference. But I mean, it's Alabama. They just came off another title appearance.
Right, right.
I think it's going to be a question of to see. I'd be more curious to see how much improvement we see from Texas. Do they make it close? No, I mean, hey, they could win. I mean, college football, that's what I think we all love about the sport. Anybody can win. Probably not Louisiana Monroe when they played in Texas the week before. But you know, crazier things have happened. So
right. And I'm kind of looking at it. Texas is kind of filled itself up with Alabama backups, per se. Some guys did get a lot of playing time, but Jahlil Billingsley going over there, and I think a lot of the coaching staff from Alabama, I think Texas is going to really want that game early on. Now, if they can win it, who knows? You know, Will Anderson, Dallas Turner on that defense, I think Alabama's going to have the best defense next year in the country.
I think it's definitely a game that's going to set the expectations for Texas for this season because, you know, you look at it right now, they've got a lot of opportunity with Oklahoma under a new coach, installing a new system. Obviously, they've had some quarterback turnover as well. This is kind of probably about the best chance that Texas has had to come out swinging in a while. And you got to look at this game and say, are they going to kind of set the bar here? Or are they going to do what's happened with Alabama opponents in the past, looking at like Florida State, USC, several other teams that have come out the game, come out in the opening weeks, faced Alabama, and it just went horribly for them. Exactly. And that, and really it set the stage for their entire seasons going forward. So I think not only whether or not they can win or lose, but also just how they look when they play that game. You know, even if they lose, you can lose and still look good doing it. I mean, if Alabama looks like world beaters in week two, there's no shame really in losing to a team that could potentially be the best team in the country, as long as you do the little things right. And, you know, you got outclassed by the fact that Saban's been there forever. He's got a really deep roster. You know, Sark's still early on in his tenure at Texas. You definitely don't want to come out and look flat-footed, look totally confused. You know, we saw this with USC a few years ago.
I was exactly thinking of that game. That game.
And Helton just got – he got Saban coach circles around him. You know, they looked like they had a pulse for a hot second, and then it was just all Alabama for the rest of the day. And that set the tone for their entire season. For me personally, I think the two things that I'm curious – or three things I'm curious about – one, what's that Alabama secondary going to look like? Or not say Alabama wide receiving core going to look like? Because as you mentioned, they have lost in consecutive seasons, they've lost a lot of talent. And then two, the Alabama coaching staff, there's always turnover there. Sometimes it's good, sometimes it's bad. And then third, has Sark finally figured out what to do with Robinson? And is he going to give him the ball as much as he deserves? Because I think that was a question that a lot of fans, especially if you only tuned into Texas games every now and then last year, you just asked about, because it seems like a lot of times in the fourth quarter especially, he just basically disappeared and there were no plays for him, even though he had a tremendous season.
I feel like he was really injured because they absolutely – when I watched Texas, they got him the ball any way they could. They threw him the ball. They handed it to him out of the backfield. What was his injury towards the end of the season? Was it a knee or was it a shoulder?
I can't remember off the top of my head, but I know that earlier in the season there were games where he had a big game through like the first three quarters and then just disappeared. And Sark didn't go back to him in the fourth, but then he was playing the next week.
Right. I'm a Hog fan, man. And they came here and they tried to run the ball, but our linebacking core, we weren't going to let that guy beat us by himself. And they tried to get it to him any way they could. But Arkansas, man, we were rough at linebacker. I'm looking for Arkansas, man. I'm looking for us to have a big season this season.
We talked about this a couple of weeks ago. And I think Arkansas is a team that a lot of people are keeping an eye on this year. And, I mean, with Pittman, it's just y'all are a fun team to watch. And kind of, you know, everybody was a little skeptical about that hire. And, you know, he's been all in on the program. And we've talked about this, too, that if you're at a team that's been struggling, if you can find a coach who's just excited to be there and, you know, fully embraces the entire concept of your program and goes, you know, whole hog in this case behind it. That was too good to pass up.
Pun intended.
Exactly. But if you can find a coach like that, then it gets the fan base excited. It gets the team excited and motivated. You start winning games that you probably shouldn't have because of that, because they think they can win. And even, you know, even if in the back of your head you're thinking, we're going to have a great season, he's going to go somewhere else, still, it makes it easier to enjoy the time that you have in that experience. You know, because you're just having so much fun, not just from the winning, but from just the fact that you feel like he's invested. So, yeah, I think that Arkansas's going to be bringing back a lot of talent, and they should be a fun team to watch this year. I think the SEC West is just prime for a lot of teams like that.
I think this year coming up, the SEC West is more open than ever before. And I think it has to do with, like, the talent being distributed through the West a little bit more, and credit the transfer portal for a lot of things going on in the SEC West. I've seen the additions to Ole Miss. I've seen even the additions that Alabama's made through the transfer portal with Jahmyr Gibbs and Eli Ricks and guys like that. But I just feel like everybody's really reloading their roster. There's the only team that's not going to maybe have a bad season, and we don't know until the season starts, is probably Auburn. I'm looking at them. They're probably going to finish last in the West. If I had to say that there was going to be a last place team, I'm interested to see how Georgia is going to respond after the success they had this year.
I wasn't going to mention Auburn, but yeah, Auburn sometimes is their own worst enemy, and this kind of looks like one of those years.
Yeah, they set that up going into this offseason for sure. Oh, man. Well, Juwan, thanks so much for joining us. It was great hearing from you.
All right. Thank you, guys. Have a good one.
Yeah, thank you. Hey, Chris, thanks for your patience. I know you wanted to join in. We'd love to hear from you.
Yeah, I just wanted to join in from an Alabama perspective of, like, Alabama's just going to beat the fucking brakes off of that Texas team. I mean, that Texas team went 5-7. It doesn't matter who they got and really what they did this offseason. Alabama has the best player on offense and defense in the entire country. Texas is going to be able to do nothing to stop it. And Steve Sarkisian proved last year that, honestly, they just it looks like a really fun game in theory, but in the end, it's going to be another, you know, USC just like it was, you know, a couple of years ago.
So what games got you the most excited heading into this season, at least in the non-conference?
It sucks that the Oregon coach went to Miami, but, like, the Georgia-Oregon is super interesting heading into the year. So that's the one that I would be most interested in, just to see how Georgia reloads after last year. Obviously they were a great team and, you know, deserved the national championship. And so
that's a good call. I don't think that's a bad game at all. I mean, I agree with you completely. The coaching change in Oregon does make it take a little bit of the edge off of what could have been even more interesting. But yeah, and that's going to be an exciting one. How about you, Sirius? What do you think? Which games got you most excited heading into this preseason or the early season?
I think, well, if we're talking about Georgia, I think, you know, with the Georgia-Oregon matchup, Dan Lanning, that's going to be the fun conversation. So with Texas, Bama, you've got Steve Sarkisian for the, you know, as a previous assistant under Saban.
Oh, yeah.
And then you've got the exact same thing happening with Dan Lanning, former defensive coordinator for Georgia, who was there for four seasons, now is the head coach at Oregon. So there's some recurring plot lines already this season that we may be seeing going forward.
100% agreed on that. Well, Chris, thanks again for joining us. We appreciate it. All right, Josh, we're sending you an invite. We'd love to hear from you again. If you want to join us, my name is Bob Akairi. I'm joined again by Sirius on RCFB Talk. We're talking whatever you want to discuss, but if you want a kind of a fun question, we've been tossing this out there. If you had access to any one Twitter account to fire off a tweet that would create chaos in the college football scene as much as possible in one tweet, what would you tweet and from what account? One of the funnier ones from there was somebody stealing the Alabama football account to write, "We honor Nick Saban, who is electing to opt out the remaining of his contract." And it goes on in a very traditional manner. So again, that kind of idea. And then following it up with Kent State football welcoming new coach and alumnus Nick Saban. Anyway, all that said, hey, Josh, we'd love to hear from you. Unmute.
Yeah, just had a, obviously, Texas and Alabama. that game coming up week two was a topic of discussion. I think it was Chris that said that they're going to beat the brakes off of the Longhorns. I am a Longhorn fan, and I was just curious, I guess, outside perspective, national perspective, if y'all kind of had that same thought process going into the game. I'm obviously a little bit biased, but with the addition of yours, beefing up the O-line a little bit, and then what I believe is the best running back and the best player in the nation, and Bijan Robinson. Sorry, I don't think Bryce Young's the best player in the nation. Just kind of curious if you think that's going to be a game where we keep it close, or if y'all are on kind of the same perspective that they're gonna just beat the brakes off of us. And then second thing is, I don't know, I joined kind of late. I don't know if y'all discussed this, but rumors out that it's going to be an 11 a.m. game, and 11 a.m. games in September in Austin are very, very hot. So curious if that's going to have any impact on the game as well.
Well, I'll say this much about the weather. At least Alabama is used to playing in hot, humid, you know, conditions in their own location. So it's not like suddenly.
Absolutely.
Getting, but at the same time, I mean, you're right. I mean, obviously you can't say enough about Bijan Robinson. I mean, he's a great player. He just absolutely kicked all kinds of butt last season. So, I mean, he'll be a factor, but at the same time, I mean, the totality of what Nick Saban's built at Alabama, crazier things have happened. I would be curious to see how Texas does. Can they keep it close? I think is going to be the big question. I'm not saying they can't. I think if they make it a close game, you know, obviously winning is a factor. They certainly could. I'm not saying it's impossible, you know, but if they make it a closer game, certainly we're going to hear lots of big hype, and probably if whatever preseason rank Texas manages to obtain, it won't move much. Assuming they're going to roll over, you know, ULM, all respects to ULM, but that's a really tough job, you know, on the best of days. And so they're that's a paycheck game for them the week before. But, mm-hmm. And even if Texas kind of, you know, it's one of those things where we've all seen that kind of situation where a team like a Texas, I'm not saying like Texas specifically, previous season for Texas, will kind of sleepwalk through a game and maybe look weaker than expected against, you know, a substandard G5 opponent like Louisiana Monroe, and then suddenly come out and just knock the teeth out of, or come close to and play up to a better opponent. Like, you know, you can't say Alabama is anything less than a premier program, obviously. But I don't know. I'm skeptical that they could pull it off, obviously, altogether, but could they bring it closer? I think that would speak a lot to the progress Steve Sarkisian's making as a head coach. How about you, Sirius? What do you think on this one?
If I had to pick, I would pick Bama to win. We kind of discussed a little bit about this, how they're going to handle the loss of offensive production in their wide receiving core. That's going to be interesting. If they've got a running back who can really step up, I think that we kind of saw a lack there last year with Alabama, where they were just really struggling to run the ball at times, which is an extremely strange thing to see with that team. And then on the other side, you know, can what's Quinn Ewers going to look like if he actually does have the starting job, and have they figured out the right way to use Bijan Robinson and get him enough touches without risking injury or overworking him? I still expect Bama to win the game personally, but like we said earlier, the big thing is how does Texas look even if they lose, or especially if they lose, and what does that mean for the rest of their season in terms of, you know, player expectations, morale, things like that. If they can look competitive, even if it's not necessarily a close score, if they can look competent and competitive, like they're doing things the right way, they just got beat out by manpower, basically, I would still be optimistic as a Texas fan. That's a dangerous position to be in based on past years. We talked about how hope is a dangerous thing. But I think that that's the big question for me, not whether or not they're going to win or lose, but are we going to like the product that Sark puts on the field this year?
Yeah,
you know, I just realized too, because that game, obviously, and it's so funny, if you go to preseason media day and talking especially to players preseason media day, if you went to Big 12 media day this year and you went up to the players and you asked them, like, oh, what game are you looking forward to? They're all going to say Louisiana Monroe. No one's even going to breathe a word about Alabama because they're all well-trained before they go there. But I'm actually looking at that schedule and I'm thinking to myself, sure, they're all hyped about Alabama. They're going to probably bring whatever they can and play their hearts out. But the next game, they're hosting UTSA, who just came off of that incredible sort of Cinderella season they had. And that team's walking into Darrell K. Royal about to try everything possible to upset Texas. And maybe their best – I mean, I don't know how they're going to compare to this season. But I'd be worried about them as well. I mean, because I'm not saying UTSA would beat Texas. But, you know, if they, all those other schools in Texas – would love nothing more than to beat Texas and then to get them after Alabama when they might be looking past you. I mean, that game could be interesting as well. I don't know. I've been so focused on, you know, Louisiana Monroe and Alabama that I didn't even realize they were hosting UTSA immediately afterwards.
Yeah, that's in that category of like the trappiest of trap games. You know, possibly it could be worse if they were playing UTSA first, but you kind of got to think that they might catch them flat-footed if it, you know, on a little bit of a downslope, win or lose after that Bama game, just because so much energy is going to go into it.
Yeah, fortunately, they're losing a lot of their past offensive production from last year, but Texas fans are very fond of Jeff Traylor, and he's definitely going to have those Roadrunners ready to play. I'll leave it on this regarding the game. First off, I know y'all were mentioning the USC game, Florida State game, and I believe Louisville, all games that Bama had opened up the season with, bigger games on paper, and then Bama kind of came out and kind of destroyed them or did Bama things to them. Counterpoint would be all those games were neutral sites. I believe all of them were in Atlanta. Could be wrong on that. But I think Bama coming to Austin could – obviously it's going to benefit the Horns, but could yield different results as opposed to the neutral site. And then one thing that I'm not sure how much is flying on the national radar is the addition of Isaiah Nayor. Last year, Xavier Worthy obviously had an amazing year. Jordan Winnington got hurt early. And when the season kind of went up in flames, it was because of the lack of wide receiver production as well as bad quarterback play. But we really didn't have a wide receiver number two that we can count on. So we're really excited about what Isaiah Nayor can do in this offense and potentially opening it up where defenses can't just all out stop Xavier Worthy and kind of shut down the offense. So I'll leave it with that. I've said a lot, but definitely excited for the upcoming season.
Thanks for joining us, Josh. We really appreciate it. And yeah, Isaiah Nayor out of Wyoming, for sure. Yeah, I mean, that's a great ad. I mean, that's the transfer portal has definitely made things a lot more interesting in terms of the ins and outs. And I'm glad he brought him up because that's not a name that we've heard mentioned very often. Because obviously everyone focuses on Edwards and all that stuff. So,
thanks again. Definitely excited for what he can do. Of course. Have a good one.
Yeah, you too.
You know, we're talking about that that post letdown trap game kind of thing. So what we saw in 2014 with Virginia Tech coming off the upset win over Ohio State.
Oh gosh, that's a great one. Yeah,
one week later was East Carolina.
And again, no, East Carolina. Oh my goodness, they love nothing more. I mean, every team loves nothing more than knocking off.
As a Virginia Tech alum, I hate playing that program. That game is never as easy as it should be on paper.
Yeah, no, and those are. But as a college football fan in general, those are the best. So again, if you're listening to us, this is our CFB Talk 22. I'm Bob Akairi. I'm joined by Sirius. We're talking whatever you want to chat about, but if you want an idea, you could take over a random Twitter account and cause the most chaos with one tweet. Which account would you take over and what would you tweet? But other than that, we'd love to hear from you, whatever you want to talk about. Chris, we let you up. We'd love to hear from you. Unmute yourself.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for having me. Appreciate you putting this on. I think if I had to choose a single Twitter account to either take over or hack, it'd have to be the SEC. And the single tweet would be the at symbol at USC, at Ohio State, at Clemson, and just the eye emoji. That's it. Just leave it open.
Yeah, that would definitely – that would blow up a lot of – I mean, so many blog posts, I mean, news blog posts, you know, like from legitimate, like SI or whoever, whatever they've become, will be written on that one tweet.
I mean, that one tweet would allow the world to burn, you know, regardless. But the reason I'm here, I think what I'm most excited about, the opening game for University of Utah, going to be played in Gainesville. Planning on making the journey out there for it. But I'm really looking forward to that game and excited to see what the Pac-12 champions can do.
Oh, man, the Pac-12 champions. That was such a crazy thing to see that season. So, you know, I love hearing that you're going to Gainesville because that's the most exciting part, I think, about being a college football fan, not specifically going to Gainesville, but going to those huge, you know, non-conference games that you get at the beginning of the season. I think any of you out there, if you have a college football team and you've never gone to a really big away game, you absolutely have to, particularly one out of conference. You know, get out of your comfort zone. Do you like to go to a lot of, I mean, Chris, yourself, do you like to go to a lot of these non-conference games yourself?
Yeah, absolutely. I actually got to go to, on my way down to the Rose Bowl over New Year's, I stopped in Las Vegas and went to the Las Vegas Bowl and got to see, you know, Arizona State versus Wisconsin. And it was a ton of fun. Highly recommend just Allegiant Stadium in general. But regarding Gainesville, I'm actually making my entire fantasy football league do our draft in Gainesville this year. So a bunch of Utah guys will be there for that game in my crew, at least.
Oh, that's wonderful. I bet that's going to be a good turnout. I can't imagine anything less for Utah, especially after that Cinderella season. And although they lost the Rose Bowl, that was a heck of a game. And the Pac-12 championship also in Allegiant Stadium, which I've heard nothing but great things. We sent a couple of people to cover games there, one UNLV game and the Las Vegas Bowl. And the one thing I keep hearing is that stadium is just like, it doesn't look quite as, you know, nifty with bells and whistles as the Rams Stadium, but the actual, like, as a game experience, I've heard nothing but good things about that facility. And I kind of can't wait to go see a game there eventually myself.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I'll go on mute, but go Utes.
Yeah, no problem. I get it. I got little ones, but they go to bed before I do this, so it's wonderful. Hey, Siri, so, I mean, that's a great point. What's your favorite away game that you've gone to, you know, sort of out of conference? Any of the schools you've been with?
Out of conference, a few years ago, went to Vanderbilt at Notre Dame. That was pretty fun. Driving in definitely highlights how in the middle of nowhere Notre Dame actually is. But, you know, got to see Touchdown Jesus, got to, you know, kind of walk around the town and the campus a little bit. Had seats that were extremely close to the end zone, so we got to see the heartbreaking drops on potential touchdown passes, you know, firsthand, up close and personal.
It's a Vanderbilt tradition.
It is, you know, and I try to go into games without a whole lot of hope, and then stuff like that happens, and you get excited, and you think that you may have a sliver of a chance, and then, of course, it all ends in heartbreak. To go really out of conference, and yet somehow still involving Notre Dame, which isn't even in a conference, I saw Notre Dame at Stanford, and it was the same day that the Kick Six happened, and that was coming right on the heels of Notre Dame getting blown out by Alabama the previous year. And of course they come on and they make the announcement. And if you've ever been to a Stanford game, you know that the attendance there is not great from the home side. And then you take Notre Dame, which has fans all across the country. They travel well. A lot of them live in the Bay Area. So it was a predominantly Irish crowd that day. And they come on the intercom and they announce what happened, and they actually, if I remember correctly, they may even have shown the video feed of it. And the crowd went crazy. they were more excited about that and the Schadenfreude of it than anything that had happened with the actual Notre Dame Stanford game up to that point. It was amazing to watch. They were just that happy to see Alabama lose in heartbreaking fashion.
Oh, absolutely. I think I went to one of the quietest games they've ever hosted at Sanford Stadium. I've been there a couple of times in 06 and 08, and those were very different years for that, because 06, they had just come off of another terrible game on season under Walt Harris. They were miserable. USC went in number one and just obliterated them. Absolutely. I think it was a shutout. And, you know, the USC fans completely outnumbered what handful of Stanford fans are in the stadium. Then, of course, 2007 happens. Harbaugh pulls that wild upset, one of the greatest upsets. It's no longer the biggest upset, but one of the biggest, top three biggest upsets of all time, knocking off USC at home when they were number one, or at least in one of the polls. I think LSU was number one in the other one in the crazy 2007 season. So 2008, they go back to Stanford. So it was actually pretty packed, and it was probably the most exciting that stadium has ever been, and USC prevailed. But I think, again, for those of you out there, if you've ever been to a big away game, especially outside of conference, it's fun. It's so funny. Some of our callers, I've been to a game at Texas. It was an incredible environment. I've been to a game at Ohio State. I've been to a game at Nebraska, at Notre Dame, at Arkansas, which was actually really fun. That was actually one of my best experiences, was at Arkansas. I always recommend it, because if you're not from the conference, it's a lot more amiable, usually, because it's not like they're used to hating your program if you're like a USC or a Texas. But anyway, I'm not going to get too far into that. Hey, Joe, you've been patient. We'd love to hear from you.
Gentlemen, how are we doing this evening?
Good. How are you?
Well, as a diehard Nebraska fan who lives in Phoenix now for the last 20 years, I am probably one of the – I shouldn't say one of the few. I know there's a great majority of us who thought that Scott Frost should have been fired last year. Trev basically let him come back, I think, due to the fact that the buyout was so expensive. And I don't think Trev ever thought in his first year as AD that Nebraska would find new and creative ways to pull defeat from the jaws of victory every week. But looking at Nebraska from the 4 years that Frost has been there, you know, he gutted the roster year two. You know, by the end of year two, into year three, basically the roster was his. But if you look at Nebraska from the year one to now, they are basically the same team they were then. They still make the same stupid mistakes as far as unnecessary penalties. They seem to be very, what would be the word, very unimaginative when it comes to offense. And that was supposed to be Scott's forte when he came there. And the defense was supposed to be kind of the bend it, don't break. And as luck would have it, Shenander over the last 4 years has got the defense to improve year by year. Now, I think this year they're going to take a big step back due to the fact that the majority of their defense from last year was the COVID guys that stuck around another year. And Trev, you know, like I said, kept them around and went ahead and dumbed down the buyout to where, you know, come October 1st, it goes from $15 million to $7.5 million. And basically has given, you know, Scott the, you know, put up or shut up type of year. You know, they brought in Mickey Joseph. They brought in Whipple from Pittsburgh. They brought in Dominic Raiola, you know, he's a brother of a former Nebraska great center. And, you know, and I think they're hoping and banking on, and I don't see it happening, that they're going to be able to turn it around. And I'm just curious. From an outsider's perspective, because I know you guys aren't from the Midwest, and obviously watching Nebraska from afar, like I said, I've watched them. You know, I've been a lifelong fan for the last 50 years and lived in Omaha for 30. Never thought in a million years living in Arizona for 20 years that they wouldn't have made it to a bowl game down here between now and then. I just figured it would be a given. But with that being said, I just look at going into next year here. You know, they did a ton of recruiting on the transfer portal side. They got Casey Thompson from Texas. Some believe that he's an upgrade from Adrian Martinez. And I personally don't believe that Adrian was the issue with Nebraska. I think it's been offensive line. I think it's been the fact that they haven't been able to develop a running back or wide receiver, and God knows we've recruited enough of them over the time that Frost has been here. And like I said, just, you know, the stupid mistakes that they have made throughout the 4 years of him being here. And I think there's just a really bad culture down there. And like I said, I think had it not been for the buyout, I think he would have been gone. And I'm just curious. I personally don't think they're going to do better than 4-8 this year, maybe 5-7. And I'm curious as to think what you guys might have to think about that.
Wow, that is not a very optimistic view. What a prediction for the season. I mean, I find it utterly fascinating, too, because I can imagine, as a Nebraska fan, as someone who is used to, I mean, those of us who, and I'm definitely old enough to know when Nebraska was unstoppable or close to.
We were the Alabama of the – Nebraska was the Alabama of the 90s.
Oh, and it's even wilder to think that, yeah, I mean, they've never really been down to the Fiesta Bowl or even in – you know, I mean, it would have been an expectation at some point, I think, at that point. So that's a great point. I mean, now –
there was a while there, I'd say that actually Nebraska in the 90s might have been better or worse, depending on your perspective, than Bama, because I feel like Bama, especially in the more recent years, you know, they tend to beat you, but they beat you in a variety of ways, whereas Nebraska just, they did the same thing over and over and just ran it down your throats until you were pulverized.
Well,
watching some of those games, I mean, it was just absolutely brutal between the offense and the defense. Peyton Manning probably still has bruises
in 90,
from Nebraska.
In 95, I do know this. They had talked about it, a lot of the players on that team, and they have talked about it, you know, since then. But the 95 team, and it can be debated that, you know, them and in the 2001 Miami team could probably be considered the two best greatest teams of all time. And Nebraska that year, you know, they just steamrolled everybody. But a lot of the players on that team, especially on the offensive side, they'd come up to the line of scrimmage, as according to some of the stories that you've heard, and they would tell the opposing defense, we're running the same play, or they would tell them what the play was because they knew they were so good that they couldn't stop it. You know, and the 97 team, you know, they were good. They were the leftovers from the 95, but – you know, comparing Alabama, the thing about Alabama is Alabama's great, and I don't disagree with you there. I think they've been given a few of their national titles, considering the fact that they haven't won their division every year. You know, in the prior BCS years, they, you know, they backed in a couple of them because, you know, either they didn't play in their title game or because of teams ahead of them losing, they got to go back to them. But, you know, the level of consistency over the last 11 years by Nick Saban, you know, good, bad, or indifferent, he is the standard bearer, and I think he's the greatest coach of all time. And that pains me to say that, because I think Tom Osborne is probably in the top five, but, you know, and who knows what would have happened had they not driven him out in 97. Yeah, I said it. Had they not driven him out in 97, and, you know, and then Osborne made the idiot mistake of picking Solich as the replacement. You know, who knows what Nebraska might have done and as far as where they would have been in the trajectory. But like I said, those are times from a long time ago that I wish and we're still here. But now it'd just be nice if we could be competitive again. And like I said, I don't see that happening next year. Not as long as Frost is the head coach anyway.
You know, we've talked about this previously, you know, with when Miami hired Cristobal to come back, and looking at what happened with Nebraska, and you think, you know, favored son coming home, kind of the if he can't win here, nobody can mentality. Maybe
it's a
dangerous kind of route to go on in terms of the hope that you might have, and it's got to be brutal if you're a Nebraska fan, right? Because, you know, he was the golden child, it seemed.
Well, he was, but I mean, keep in mind, and by the way, that opinion that if he can't win, no one can, that's the opinion of the Frost fan who doesn't want Frost get fired. The thing about it is that
you could still win huge at Nebraska, because the kids aren't coming to Nebraska or Alabama or Texas or wherever because of the school or because of the lineage or the history of the school. They're coming because of the coach. I mean, Nebraska certainly has the financial whereabouts to where they could hire almost anyone in the country, you know. And the problem with Nebraska is, and I will say this, it's the idiot fan base. The expectations are so unreal now, and because Frost is the last guy with Tom Osborne's stink that's still around, you know, God forbid if we get rid of him, what is going to happen? Is the end of the world going to happen? I personally believe you got Mickey Joseph there. You got him on a 3-year deal. I would have loved to have seen Nebraska take a crack at the Baylor head coach last year because he has the working, Mickey down at LSU. He is someone who obviously shows discipline, which Nebraska lacks. And like I said, it's not about, you know, if Frost can't do it, no one can. There are plenty of coaches that we can hire for $4 million a year now that can win 3 games. I mean, that's easy. I mean, like I said, I'm just to the point to where I don't care if he played at Nebraska or not. At this point, I just want someone in there who can turn the program around, get us back to 80s level Nebraska. Hell, not even 90s at this point, because at this point, we can't even beat Illinois. I mean,
I think the problem with Nebraska is the same problem with the rest of the Big Ten, is they're behind in the times. They're still trying to line up and run the football the same. I see that they hired Mickey Joseph and they hired the guy from over at Pittsburgh. Uh-huh. and that's a good start right there. But they have to update that offense. And I think, and if you turn the score around on a lot of those games, I think Nebraska lost a lot of those games by single digits this year. They weren't a bad football team when you really look at it. And I agree with you. Adrian Martinez wasn't as bad as everybody tried to make him out to be, because at times he was the only offense for Nebraska. But I think if they update that offense and they get more, I'm not saying go completely spread, because that seems what every team is doing now. But if they get a good mix of run pass up there, and they get some more athletes on the outside and some playmakers, Nebraska could be a good team, especially in the division that they're in the Big Ten. You play against who? Illinois and Iowa and a couple of more guys. I think Purdue's been the shocker on that side. And as long as you got teams like that are keep developing every year and keep upsetting teams, man, it's going to be a while before you see Nebraska get back. But I'm interested to see what they'll do with Casey Thompson. I do think they'll be a better team. Casey Thompson brings a more of a passing aspect to Nebraska, where Adrian Martinez was, you knew he was more of just a runner. He never really gave you the threat of a passing attack. Yeah,
but didn't have any wide receivers. And, you know, and on top of it, it doesn't matter how great Casey Thompson. Here's the thing, and this is the thing that I always think is kind of forgotten. When the kids go into the transfer portal, the reason they're going into the transfer portal is because they're not any good. Because if the teams that they originally committed
– Is that true all the way?
Oh, absolutely. I mean
– So is Quinn Ewers not any good?
Quinn Ewers left Texas because he was chasing the money from the NIL, and you know that as well as I do. The only reason –
What about Kenneth Walker?
The only reason he went to Ohio State was because he was chasing the NIL money.
Right, right. Well, what about Kenneth Walker and Joe Burrow and a lot of other guys like that?
Well, Joe Burrow never got the chance.
That's the other side of it, is that some of these guys are buried on the depth chart, or like Kenneth Walker, they're in a offensive program where they're not going to get enough touches to really shine. You talk to Wake Forest fans, and a lot of them will admit that they knew that he was really talented. But just the way that their offensive system's designed, it's meant for multiple backs and not having a single, you know, every down kind of guy, which is why you saw him just transcend once he got to Michigan State.
Well, and the other thing is, and all you have to do is look at the SEC. The powerhouses win inside out, meaning if you don't have the defense and offensive lines, it doesn't matter how great your school players are. Casey Thompson could be the second coming of Joe Montana this year at Nebraska, but if he's laying on his back the whole damn time because his offensive line doesn't block for him, and it doesn't matter who the skill players are. I mean, we have, like, I think right now Nebraska has, between their running backs and their wide receivers commitments, I think they have close to 20 scholarship guys in just those two rooms. And when they went ahead on the transfer portal this last one, or, you know, they went out and got the
I guess, the top Division II punter and kicker because, well, those were both the drizzle shits at Nebraska last year. But they never addressed the offensive line or the defensive line. They only got 8 guys on their defensive line coming back. So if any of them get hurt, there's no depth. And they got all these offensive linemen who, you know, they're young. They haven't been proven. And then, you know, why did we hire Raiola? Well, we hired Raiola because his brother has a son, his nephew, who's going to be a 5-star quarterback. And everyone has said that he wants to come to Nebraska. But he's only going to come to Nebraska if Frost can get it turned around. But that's why they brought his uncle in. It wasn't because he was an offensive line genius at the Chicago Bears. They brought him in because he had Nebraska stink, and they're trying to get that quarterback in 2 years. But it ain't going to matter if Frost can't turn it around. And like I said, I think the ship has sailed. I think, you know, everyone looked at what he did at UCF. Well, he was getting the 4th or 5th best, you know, he was getting lower-tier Florida players in the American Conference, and he was running circles around everyone because they were all better than anything else that anyone else had. And if you look at the system down there at UCF, they were committing a ton of penalties when he was down there, and their defense wasn't all that good, but they weren't playing world beaters on offense. And because their offensive talent was so much better than everyone else, they were able to overcome all the stupid penalties they would make. Can't do that in the Big Ten. And Frost has shown that he's not smart enough to figure it out. You know, I think it's just going to be, like I said, I think it's going to be a lost season. And the only reason why he's back is because Trev didn't want to pay the $15 million in the buyout.
Well, all I have to add on to it is that I hope that with that renegotiated buyout that there is a clause in there that says a solid portion of it's going to Mackenzie Milton because Scott Frost owes him a lot of money. But
that's true.
From what sense? I mean, it was Frost. I mean, you can look at that one of two ways.
Mackenzie Milton's a great player who made Scott Frost look really, really smart. And helped him get that job. And, you know, without having another Mackenzie Milton and some of the other changes you mentioned too, but that went a long way. Appreciate having you on, Joe. We got some other callers lined up, so we'll move on and see what all they have to discuss.
Have a good one, my friends.
Thanks, Joe. That was great. I feel really bad again for Nebraska fans having to deal with that last season. Cause I mean, one of the users on RCFB created a really interesting post just comparing that point differential, because I'm sure some of you may know this, but Nebraska managed to go, you know, have a losing record, but at the same time, you know, be arguably, I think somebody said, the best 3-win team in history, because they somehow managed to score more points in a couple of blowouts and all those extremely close losses, which I can't even imagine the suffering of any fan base who has to witness that. It's neat on paper for everybody else, but if you're a Huskers fan, that's just brutal. But
best 3-win team in college football history, I believe, is. I mean, I guess you could probably go back far enough and find some teams that played like 3 to 5 games in a season that might have an argument.
No,
but
no, somebody actually really went back and looked through all the seasons ever. And I mean, I don't think a 3-5 would necessarily – I think they were calculating total points in that. So by very nature, a 3-5 team would never be able to score that many points unless it was like – I don't know, unless one of those games was, you know, Georgia Tech versus Cumberland. But, you know, it was just an unfortunate record that they set there. But again, you know, in a way, you know, I'll just say this much. It's part of why we all love college football, because you see these kinds of weird situations that, you know, doesn't really manifest itself in the pros before someone's head rolls. But I think that was really interesting and a lot of good perspective there, and we appreciate it. So, Trey, we'd love to hear from you.
Yeah, so I appreciate either the host or someone else saying they enjoy the Arkansas home game.
That was me. Yeah, absolutely. No, I love that. I went to the game. And I mean, to be fair, and this isn't any blame on you, I went there when USC was playing there. So it was wasn't a great game for the home team. But all of that said, I mean, the entire experience, the pregame, the calling of the Hogs before the game even began. I mean, I've got that seared in my head. I remember, I mean, again, I live in Minnesota, but I grew up in the armpit of California, Bakersfield, where I served 15 years, is how I like to phrase it. But I remember one time I was pulling up at a stoplight, and I pulled behind a guy, and I saw he had an Arkansas plate and University of Arkansas license plate frame. So I just – he was on the phone. He turned, and he saw me just do – and if you know what the hand signal is, it almost looks like the Wu-Tang symbol. But, the hand gesture. And I just looked at him, and I kind of did that. And then he stopped his phone call, rolled down the window, and is like, "Pig suey." And I'm like, "Yep." It sticks with you. But, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off there, Trey. But, yeah, no, that was me, and I absolutely enjoyed every moment I had in Fayetteville.
Well, I bet you did, because y'all stomped us pretty bad, and we switched quarterbacks the next game. And then we switched to Mitch Mustaine, who had a very good – oddly enough, yeah. You're welcome, I guess. I don't know. But yeah, that was a very interesting game to listen to on the radio and then shut off in the third quarter. But in all seriousness, Arkansas's 2022 non-conference schedule is the most interesting thing that I want to talk about tonight. One, we're going to Provo, Utah to play BYU. I think only Mississippi State's traveled out there from the SEC. Then we play Cincinnati. I think it's at home. And they are coming off a fantastic season for their program. And Liberty with former Arkansas State coach Hugh Freeze. And I think he went to he coached a school in Mississippi. I can't remember which one it is. But the last thing is Mizzou.
Ole Miss.
Ole Miss? Oh, that's school over in Oxford. Okay. Missouri State is coming to Fayetteville.
Oh, Coach Petrino.
Oh, Motorcycle Mouse himself. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly what Juwan said.
I hope they stomp him. Woo pig.
Thank you very much. Anyway, it's the most interesting non-conference schedule that I can remember for the Razorbacks. A great BYU team, a Cincinnati team that's coming off a great season, Hugh Freeze and Liberty, and then, one of the hardest times to be an Arkansas Razorback fan, with someone falling off a motorcycle and his assistant falling off also. But anyway.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. I mean, Juwan, I want to hear your thoughts on this, too, since you're also a Razorback fan. I mean, Sirius and I could say something about this, but I'd love to hear your thoughts on it as well.
On which part? The schedule or the Petrino?
Well, both. Might as well.
Well, on the schedule, man, I think our schedule is setting us up to have a pretty good season, like the guy just said. Excuse me, I don't remember your name. But we play Cincinnati at home to start our season off, which is going to be a really good game. I think Cincinnati lost a lot of guys to the NFL, so I don't think they're going to be as competitive as they would have been maybe if we would have played them this season. But I think that'll be a nice game for us. And then we're going to go into South Carolina. No, I think South Carolina plays in Fayetteville this year. And I'm interested in that game. Shane Beamer, he's a coach that's really making waves in the SEC. He brought Spencer Rattler over there from Oklahoma, Austin Stogner, and they got a couple more guys. So that's it. Overall, I'm just looking for South Carolina to see what they're going to be in the SEC East. I'm really keeping my eyes locked over there. But Arkansas, then we're going to go and play, I believe, the third game. Is it Missouri State that we play third game?
Yeah, it is. That's when you guys get Missouri State. And I have to say, that South Carolina game is going to be interesting. I mean, you guys get tested in that first game with Cincinnati. And I don't know when that game is scheduled. As you know, those games get scheduled years in advance. So the Cincy you scheduled probably back then wasn't expected to be coming off of a playoff run. So, they're certainly a stronger team than I think was necessarily expected when they were scheduled. But that South Carolina game, that's going to be their first real test. I mean, granted, it's South Carolina, and they occasionally will kind of implode. But I know Shane Beamer has been probably one of, if not the most impressive first-year coach last season. I know Sirius has gone and said quite a bit on this in previous RCFB talks. But that's going to be their real test because they open with Georgia State. So it's not going to necessarily be as much of a challenge as Cincy is going to be for – the Razorbacks, but that's going to be where we're going to really see how they're doing after that Duke's Mayo season where they got their coach dunked and how they look now under Shane Beamer. Because we know we typically have ended up with a lot of a remarkable number of South Carolina fans who called into this show. But this is like a Razorback night, it turns out. But the I'd be curious to see how that game goes as well. And then, yeah, week three is Missouri State and the prodigal son returns.
It gets brutal after week three. We play A&M followed by Alabama. And, man, that's the thing about that SEC West schedule. You never get a game off. Every game is going to be a physical game. You're probably going to leave a little bit banged up. So you can never really say who's going to win any particular game. Any time a team doesn't show up, you can get beat. And that with that schedule, just the Hogs, man, we've got to be dialed in. We've made some key transfer moves. We just got a defensive end from Georgia Tech, I believe. We pulled in a safety from Georgia. That's going to help just with the championship experience. We got a defensive lineman from LSU and also a defensive back from LSU. So I'm looking for Arkansas to be much improved from the last season. We had a pretty good season this year, 9-4, but we have to improve on that and actually go out and earn some more respect because we've been at the bottom of the SEC overall for a couple years now. I remember Vanderbilt coming into Fayetteville and embarrassing us. So we've been the laughing stock, and I'm glad that we have Sam Pittman, a coach that actually wants to be here and is dedicated fully to the Arkansas program. And what he's building over here, I 100% love it. 100% behind Coach Pittman. And I'm looking for us to be contending for the West this year. We barely, if we would have got that 2-point conversion down in Oxford this year, we could have kicked the field goal and went to overtime, but I love the mentality of the coaching staff to go for the 2-point conversion and go for the win in that tight game with Ole Miss. That was an exciting game this year. Matt Corral and KJ Jefferson were both, they were both on their game that day. There was a lot of explosive plays. There was a lack of defense for both teams, but there was a lot of explosive plays. It was an exciting game. And I looked at the ratings the other day. I think that was the most watched game, I'm pretty sure, or something along those lines. It got a really good rating.
Yeah, I just realized this is kind of a curiosity in the scheduling, and I don't know how much, I doubt many people have talked about it outside of their own fan base. But Liberty actually, I just realized Liberty goes back-to-back hosting BYU and then going to Arkansas. And then meanwhile, Arkansas goes to, you know, heads out to BYU. And then they've got a game in between at Auburn, and then they host Liberty. So those three programs are going to have a little playoff between them.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. Like, we almost had a game with Notre Dame before COVID. So it was almost the traditionally Catholic school, traditionally Mormon school, traditionally evangelical school, and then run the gauntlet again. So I'm not sure that that was thought out, but is part of it.
Well,
I think it's kind of interesting.
BYU plays Notre Dame right before they play Arkansas. So, and that's the game they're playing in Vegas. Like their Shamrock series. So it's Notre Dame's deal, clearly. But so they got a neutral site game versus Notre Dame in Vegas. And then they're going to host Arkansas the following week. I'll just say this, by the way, BYU always schedules, I mean, I think it's exciting they're going to the Big 12, but for an independent, they definitely get creative with their scheduling. That lineup, you know, hosting Notre Dame, pardon me, neutral against Notre Dame, hosting Arkansas, and then going to Liberty. That's going to be an interesting stretch for those fans in the middle of the season. But sorry, Sirius, what were you saying?
I was just going to say that, you know, we've talked in the past about playoff expansion, and I think that this Arkansas schedule actually could have been really interesting in an expanded playoff situation. If you're talking about like a 12-team playoff, because you look at it and on the surface, you know, first glance, all right, there's no P5 teams on there, but you've got future P5s in Cincinnati and BYU. And then a traditional, under Hugh Freeze, at least the past few years, a pretty competitive Liberty team. And obviously playing in the very, very competitive SEC West. You kind of wonder what would have happened if Arkansas had strung together a 10 or 11 win season with that schedule, even without those out of conference P5 games.
Oh yeah, I think that would be a very strong contender. I think that's a plausible way. Had we had an expanded playoff, which, you know, if we do, it's going to be a few years at this rate, because apparently people couldn't get to some kind of an agreement, which, you know, it's dumb. I mean, the fans would have loved it. I think a handful of fan bases wouldn't have loved it, but I think most of college football would have loved that.
Boy, but I think that's the fear.
What part of it?
Of an expanded playoff, just more. Would we have really wanted a third SEC team in? I'm an SEC fan. I'm an Arkansas fan, but I love just seeing other teams get in there. Like, I love seeing Michigan in there this year. I'm waiting for another Pac-12 team, but I really wasn't as interested in the Georgia-Alabama game, because this is what they're doing. They're making it to where the SEC championships or championship games overall just don't even matter. So this is what I was telling somebody a couple weeks ago. We should have never seen Alabama versus Georgia part two. Not only did Alabama beat them, but that game wasn't even close. I don't care how good Georgia looked all year. If you get to that SEC championship game and you lose in the fashion that you just lost in, you shouldn't be anywhere near the playoff at all.
Well, I mean,
it's just my opinion.
I know. And it pains me to say this, but Alabama proved themselves back into it, though. I think we can say that. I mean, and I perhaps it is just that competitive nature in the SEC. But that was what made it so striking. Hey, so guys, I want to let in one last caller, because we're going to probably be tying this up pretty soon. Dustin, I know you've been really patient. I want to let you get your chance to speak. We'd love to hear from you.
Well, thanks, guys. I'll be pretty quick. I know you guys are trying to wrap it up. Sooner fan here, you mentioned earlier about traveling and getting to non-conference games, had the opportunity to go a lot of those places. And I was getting – I wanted to tell my buddy that was here, the Nebraska fan, that I'm really, really looking forward to going to Lincoln this year. Want to see what that's all about, because I grew up just as that game started to be once every 4 years instead of every other year type of deal. So I'm really looking forward to that. I think Nebraska's got a lot going on. And our last caller, Arkansas, that was a fun place to play too. I went and watched a game that didn't even have OU in it. It was a random Alabama game, and poor Arkansas. It was not a good day for them. My question is, you mentioned about the transfer portal and guys that weren't getting their chances and everything. One of you guys admitted to be a Southern Cal fan. I don't think that's the case. Yeah, I think it was there for the longest time, but I think the last couple of years, especially with the big coaching changes and that's all of the rules are being unwritten, rewritten, and with the Nebraska stuff and those types of things, are places like Nebraska, are places like other schools like that, if they get the right coach in there, are they going to be able to become those big places? Because we're starting to see, you know, the Lincoln Riley move, the Brian Kelly move. Are there going to be places for these Midwestern teams, the traditional teams that are not in those fancy places, are they going to be able to get that transfer power like that anymore?
I think that's a great question, and I get exactly where you're coming at. You know, can traditional powers that weren't necessarily in the SEC powerhouses or desirable locations have that ability to pull in talent using the transfer portal? Am I characterizing that correctly? I don't want to.
Yeah, I think so, and I mean, I'm not really so worried about it for us, because one, the pending SEC move, and two, we didn't, you know, right now we're not we're not working on coming back up. We can, as long as we stay in the conversation of power, we should be all right. But the Nebraskas of the world that I think everybody wants to do well, what happens for them?
Well, you know, I think this is a situation where a really good coach can turn things around. I've always, now I'm thrilled that players obviously are getting a bigger chunk of the pie, and maybe they can get a bigger chunk. I'm not saying they shouldn't, but one thing is for certain, I always thought that coach pay can sometimes be quite easy to explain when you see what a great coach can do for a football program. I mean, the joke is, you know, you see some programs where they chug out NFL talent, and the what you see in the college field isn't that great to begin with. But I think if Nebraska got that coach that seems to get them moving again and in the right direction, you could see them start to be a success again. Just like Michigan, Harbaugh, people were really for a while there wondering if Harbaugh could ever make Michigan break, you know, past that sort of shadow they were in under Ohio State, and they did this season. So I'm sure that will benefit them in the long run. So I'm sure if a program, and I'm glad you acknowledged, because Oklahoma moving to the SEC certainly has helped them a lot, and will keep them relevant. Like, and they will remain, I think, as relevant as they were prior to this. I mean, they've always been a relevant blue blood program. But I think personally, I think the if you get the right coach at some of these programs, you will certainly be able to take advantage of this new reality of the transfer portal and being able to bring in players. Now, and especially at a program like Nebraska, you probably also have the booster support to get and the program support to get what you need to keep it relevant and the facilities and all of that. But I think it's a legitimate question. Now, I'm yet convinced that, I mean, because some people have been doomsayers about that. And I know exactly where you were coming at when you asked that question. Will this end up, you know, kind of driving talent to a couple of programs, or will the rich get richer kind of situation? I don't know if that's necessarily going to be the case, but I think it's definitely made it fair for some of the players who think they're being underutilized. Because we've certainly, there was actually a post on RCFB, and I don't have it handy, but it was, you know, the Tom Brady question, who's a player who was okay in college or even good in college, or maybe not, but who ended up being a superstar in the NFL, which was the classic, like, oh, wow, I guess our coaches in college didn't know how to use them kind of situation. But I think to that extent, we could argue the portal has opened that up quite a bit more. I know Sirius's phone died. He just told me that over our sort of our personal chat. So I'm going to go ahead and wrap it up because we've been going a little longer. We usually go for an hour, and we realized we went for an hour and now almost 20 minutes. So on behalf of myself, Bob Akairi, on behalf of Sirius, thanks to all of you who've been asking questions tonight. This was a great talk. We enjoyed hearing from all of you. We'll try to do this. We try to do these every Tuesday night at 10 p.m. Eastern. So have a great night, everyone, and take care.